Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, we often hear the stats on cyclists injured and also frequently, sadly, killed on Irish roads. We don't always hear the stories behind those figures. So what are the most common types of traumas that cyclists sustain and what can be the lasting impact of those injuries? Well, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. John Legg, consultant in emergency medicine at St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, and on the line by Ciarán Cannon, president of Cycling Ireland and, of course, former minister. And you're both welcome to the programme. John, I'm going to start with you. I mean, the most common types of cycling injuries that you see in emergency medicine, what are we talking?
We're mostly talking head injuries, upper limb injuries, falling off the bike, arm goes out, breaks the fall, break your arm.
Mm-hmm. So sort of elbow, hands, wrists, those sort of things?
Those kind of things, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you say head injuries, how serious are we talking?
It varies. So, I mean, I think about, I heard one statistic, 90% of our cycling incidents go unreported. So somebody falls over, bangs their head, they carry on with the day, don't come to hospital, don't come to our attention. So it really varies. People who end up going to hospital with a significant head injury will probably overrepresent in our data then as well.
Mm-hmm. So you do have the data then. Once people come to you, you are taking a note of how that injury happened and we are finding out about that, are we, in terms of the statistics?
To a certain extent, yes.
Right. Well, tell us how it works then.
So the RSA will record their data from, major collisions where a patient gets brought to the hospital, and the guards will report the data back to them. We will report data through the major trauma network, but only patients who are significantly injured, who require a 72-hour admission, or who die in hospital, will actually be captured in that data.
Right. So there may be a lot more happening here than we know about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Ciarán, can I bring you in? I mean, people will probably remember that you were really seriously injured in a collision about 4 years ago now. Will you remind us and tell us a little bit about what happened?
Good morning, Ciarán, and good morning, John. Yes, I was cycling to Clifton on a beautiful sunny summer's afternoon, coming through Moycullen village, which is just outside Galway city, and an SUV ran into my right hand side, just cut me clean off and sent me flying into the air and caused me a very serious injury to my knee.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the injury.
It was what's described as a tibial plateau fracture. It essentially means the platform upon which your knee rests was shattered into pieces. I now have a metal plate and screws in my knee that allowed that bone to fuse and knit back together again. It means that I am impacted for life by that injury. It also means, according to a recent assessment by my surgeon, that I will ultimately need a total knee replacement later in life.
Right, so that's coming up for you, and that's on the mind, I'm sure, as well.
It is. At 60 years of age, that's something one shouldn't have to contemplate, but it's what is contemplated by the thousands of cyclists that are injured on Irish roads over and over again. And it's when we're focusing on the whole issue of road safety, Claire, and quite rightly, we're looking to achieve Vision Zero by 2050, zero deaths on our road. But we need to be equally emphatic in ensuring that these kinds of life-changing traumatic injuries are also eliminated as well. That's how you know you've completely created a completely safe system.
Yeah. Are you back on the bike now, Ciarán?
Thankfully, and it's one of the more positive aspects of that particular incident that I eventually found my way back onto the bike, enjoying something I love doing with my friends, with my clubmates. But there are other things, Claire, that I won't be able to do again. I don't want to go into them, but having that opportunity to go back cycling has been very valuable to me from a mental health perspective and from my well-being as well.
But it does change you. I mean, anyone who's even had a less serious incident on a bike, you're nervous, aren't you, afterwards? Do you find that?
Yes, you're nervous. Exceptionally careful. Hyper careful, almost obsessively careful when you're cycling in an urban environment in particular, because the opportunity for these incidents to arise increases significantly in that urban setting. And we know from all of the data that you've just mentioned that that's where the vast majority of incidents of that nature take place, in high trafficked urban areas in Ireland and indeed across the world.
Mm-hmm. John, what do you understand is happening when you're talking to people who have been involved in these collisions? I know there's different reasons, but what's the most common ones?
Again, it depends. So about a lot of injuries will take place at a certain junctions. So like left turning vehicles is a known risk factor.
Mm-hmm. So the driver isn't checking when they're turning left.
Yeah.
And there's a cyclist coming along the inside of them and they're straight into them.
That's be a fairly common one. That's where we get our quite serious injuries.
Mm-hmm.
About 2/3 of cyclists will just come off their bike. We're not really sure why. Do they uneven surface, gravel, slipped? But that'd be the majority of injuries. They're usually more minor.
Yeah.
There might just be a broken wrist.
But then you have, and anyone who has cycled around any urban area will know that you'll have a lovely cycle lane and then it'll just abruptly end and you're onto a road which might have an uneven surface or be less safe. I'm sure that's causing accidents as well, is it? Or incidents rather.
Absolutely. Anecdotally, I'd say definitely. Now, again, when you're collecting this data, it's very hard to do so because the data is localised to the hospital the patient gets brought to. Now, Dublin Inquirer and Irish Cycle, they have this thing called a collision tracker where users can actually upload their own instance where they've actually had a near miss or an actual collision.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gives you more like a heat map of where these things are happening.
Right. When we talk about these, about cycling on the programme, we'll always hear from people who say that helmets should be mandatory. What's your own view on that, John?
I think, look, if you're going to cycle, it's a good idea to wear a helmet. There's no actual legislation that says you should do so. But I suppose if you want to introduce that, I'd want to see evidence to suggest that's actually going to make an improvement to safety and actually turn people away from cycling.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to make cycling safe for everyone, the way you do it is you invest in infrastructure. You make cycle lanes that actually function at the level you'd allow a 6-year-old to cycle on. And you improve driver behaviour and you remove the risk. A helmet will help you in certain scenarios, but in the major collisions where people are dying, I don't think a helmet's going to make is going to make the difference between life and death. And if you're hit by a heavy vehicle, there's not much a helmet's going to do for you.
Right. You're a cyclist yourself, John, aren't you?
Yes.
And do you feel safe?
I'm used to it and I do have a good cycle lane for most of my journey to and from work.
Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference, doesn't it? You feel so protected when there is a decent cycle lane. Kieran, what's your view on helmet wearing and whether they should be mandatory?
I'll be honest, Claire, it's a total distraction from the actual challenge at hand. The challenge at hand is to create safe systems. That's embedded in our National Road Safety Strategy. It's the outcome of years of research globally on how exactly you protect cyclists and pedestrians, all vulnerable road users on our roads. Just as in workplace safety, helmets for cyclists function as PPE, as personal protective equipment. But they're the last line of defence.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the primary solution. They don't prevent crashes. They only mitigate injury if a crash actually happens. And, you know, if you make that comparison between, and you know, health and safety is complete science. We spend millions every year ensuring that all of our people who go into their workplace, where those workplaces are inherently dangerous places, that we do all we can to minimise and mitigate that risk. So the most effective protection for workers and cyclists is way up the hierarchy of priorities. You know, we have engineering controls in workplaces. We eliminate the danger of machinery. The cycling equivalent is we provide bike lanes. We actually remove cyclists from the danger that is posed to them by fast-moving traffic. But relying solely on helmets, it's like telling a factory worker, Claire, to wear a hard hat around a dangerous machine because it's simply not going to work. We have to remove the danger, and that's the science. Ambition that is included in Vision Zero, and we need to work towards that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be sending a child out on a bike without a helmet either.
Absolutely not. But the point being clear is that the reason that that child is exposed to danger on our roads is not whether he or she is or is not wearing a helmet. It's because they are not cycling in a safe environment. Cycling by itself is a completely benign activity, but it takes place in dangerous environments. So we've got to remove the danger rather than kind of imposing the responsibility on a child cycling to school or cycling to meet their friends to be dressed head to toe in high vis and wearing a helmet. We are going about this the wrong way if that is our sole focus. And right now, the vast majority of these debates end up in this exact same place. So it's about eliminating the danger. And another aspect of this, Claire, is the danger arises from speed. A pedestrian or a cyclist by a vehicle travelling at 30 kilometres an hour, they have a 90% chance of survival. At 60 kilometres per hour, it's a zero chance of survival. Mm-hmm. So we've got to do all other things for there to make cycling safer before we arrive at the solution, that the helmet solution solves all problems, because that is simply not the case.
Yeah, I mean, then on the other side of it, you need education for cyclists too, because you will often come across cyclists who are going through red lights, who are, you know, hammering it through towns when the traffic is crawling. I mean, there is learning to be done on both sides of this, Ciarán.
There is, and cyclists are very much aware of the danger that they're exposed to. But again, they're operating in a dangerous environment. And again, there's a myth out there, and all the data shows that it's a myth. In fact, we had red light detection lights on our brakes, a red light detection lights on some streets in Dublin up to about 4 or 5 years ago. And they showed that the majority of users breaking red lights were cars,
right,
not cyclists.
Okay, just your line is breaking up, and it just seems to be getting worse rather than better. I have messages coming in on this. Ronan says he's a cyclist and he drives 1,000 kilometres a week as well. He feels the law should be that all cyclists, walkers, runners, etc. should wear high-vis or use lighting front and rear when on national and regional roads. The amount of cyclists that don't have lighting or high visibility is high. But again, I suppose that brings us back, John, doesn't it, to where do we start here? And you believe, as Ciarán does, that we should start with the road infrastructure. And then, yes, it's great to have the high-vis stuff and the helmet, but that's not going to save you if you're hit by a car.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you look at other countries where they actually have made the investment in cycling, like Amsterdam, you will see loads of people out cycling, all ages, all levels of frailty as well. And you will see very few injuries, and you will see absolutely no PPE being worn. Like you'll hardly see a helmet in Amsterdam being worn. Mm-hmm. And that's because they've made the investment in infrastructure that the need is no longer there.
Yeah, I was checking that actually about Amsterdam, and it is true that most cyclists there don't wear helmets. They're not mandated to, but that's because they're safe.
Exactly.
As they go about their business.
And we could have that too.
Mm-hmm. And there was a big push during COVID and in the immediate aftermath, wasn't there, to invest and build cycle lanes. That's on the wane now, would you say?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's very hard to get anything done, because any proposal can just be sidebarred by a single objection. Mm-hmm. And it's just very hard to make any kind of progress.
Okay. Ciarán, I just want to come back to you just to check your line more than anything else. But do you agree with that point that there was a great push during COVID to build cycle lanes? Has that fallen off now?
I would be concerned that it has, Claire. And yes, we achieved an awful lot during COVID in putting in place the kind of infrastructure that separates cyclists from fast-moving traffic. We were incredibly ambitious post-COVID to continue that programme. And that commitment now seems to be missing from our current programme for government. Mm-hmm. What also seems to be missing, Claire, I would argue, is the ambition to put in place all of the speed limit changes that were also provided for in the programme for government. We had that change in recent weeks, moving to 60 kilometres per hour on our rural roads. The next phase of that was supposed to be moving our national secondary roads from 100 kilometres an hour down to 80 by the end of this month. That now seems to have been pushed out by the Department of Transport.
Right.
They also have made the commitment to go down to 30 kilometres per hour in all of our urban settings, and that's also been pushed out. So we need to ask the ministers involved. They need to recommit to having all of these reduced speed limits in place by the end of this year.
Okay.
If we are actually serious about saving lives and reducing serious injury, there are so many things we could be doing right now that we're not doing.
Okay.
And that's the message people need to take from this conversation.
Ciarán, thanks very much for being with us. Ciarán Cannon there, President of Cycling Ireland, and Dr. John Legg, who is with us here as well from St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin. And we'll bring you some of the many text messages coming in on that one as we go through the rest of the programme.